seconds. Lucas fires for the win. He got it! He got it! Oh, my goodness.
Hands to Brito.
He's hit the backfield. He's hit the backfield. Adam Decker with the play of the game. Scott Aloysius for three and the win. Touchdown, MSU! As Michigan State is now going to the Final Four.
Hey everybody, welcome to the only podcast, the most presumptuously named Michigan State podcast on the internet. I am LVS. I'm here with my co-pilot, Pete Rossman, and we're here to talk about Michigan State football. It's a big week for the Spartans as we head to Ann Arbor at the end of this week. But first, let's talk about the win over Wisconsin, just an absolutely fantastic performance over a very good team, wouldn't you say, Pete?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if very good is the right moniker. Wisconsin is a good team. I don't think they've looked very good yet, but I was still honestly quite impressed with Michigan State performance last Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They've been, they've looked middling against the strong competition that they've played so far this season. But, you know, still there's a lot of talent on that team, and it's a team that was expected to be at the top of the conference heading into the season. So that we got this good of a performance this early in the season, I think, says a lot of things about the direction of this team and the way that things might look going forward. So what impressed you the most about the game on Saturday?
What impressed me the most was probably the defense's ability to get stopped. Well, we had those three touchdown drives against us. One of them was just four plays and 77 yards for James White. It's just repeatedly gashing for our defense. But other than that, for some reason, Scott Tolk and his receivers just looked completely out of sync last Saturday. And whether that was the effect of, you know, the Spartan secondary or just, you know, an off day, I think either way it still speaks to, honestly, the best pass defense performance I think I've seen under Mark D'Antonio coached off at defense under a good team, against a good team, rather.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. I think that, Tolzien wasn't helped out by a couple of big drops that his receivers made. I think in the aftermath of the game, a bunch of Wisconsin blogs have had a lot of agita about how Nick Toon played in the game and just how their receivers didn't step up. But, you know, I think that our coverage had a whole lot to do with that. I think the secondary played its best game that I can remember. I mean, God knows that Michigan State secondary has struggled over since forever. And I thought that it was a really strong performance. I thought that Trenton Robinson and Chris L. Rucker were especially good. I thought that Johnny Adams was solid. And essentially, I thought that it was a real leap forward for the defense.
Yeah, too. I mean, I think Greg Jones, only had eight tackles, was just, the three breakups he had were just sweet, especially that one against John Clay in that third and one, were just, for some reason, the Wisconsin offense is like, hey, we're just going to open up this five-yard hole for John Clay. Let's see if nobody comes through, and he put the ball, and it's a four-yard loss.
Absolutely. And, I mean, how often do you see John Clay taking four-yard losses? That never happens. I mean, that guy can just fall forward and get back to the line of scrimmage. That was just an absolutely fantastic play by Jones. And it happened on the play immediately before Keyshawn Martin's huge punt return. So I think, those two plays were the huge momentum swing in the game, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's when Michigan State took the lead and didn't lose it. And honestly, that's another – I mean, Wisconsin, they looked hungover on Saturday because the reason Keyshawn Martin got to return that was – of a Wisconsin penalty, I think it was a false start or some 5-yard penalty on the first punt that Keyshawn caught. Then the second punt was just his line drive where
it was a terrible punt. Yeah, it was a terrible punt. And I mean, Wisconsin's got major special teams issues of their own. I mean, they had that false start on the punt, and then they were offsides on a kickoff at the end of the game. It's just bizarre. But I think a lot of the credit goes to our guys. Just there were the three turnovers in the first half. Which, Nichols' fumble was not a good one. Cousins' first interception was not a good one. The second interception, I don't really think you can blame Cousins for that. I think that was a really nice play by J.J. Watt and whoever the Wisconsin player that intercepted the ball.
Right.
But I will echo your statement on Dre Jones. I think that the eight tackles, that kind of tackle count, would you would normally think of as a kind of a below average game for Jones, because we're so used to him racking up, you know, 14, 15, 16 tackle games. But I thought that he was outstanding on Saturday. I thought that, you know, eight of those eight tackles, three of them were for a loss. I thought he was constantly disrupting plays. And additionally, I think that he and Eric Gordon deserve a lot of credit for shutting down Lance Kendricks. MSU has had so much trouble in the past few years covering tight ends, and particularly in this game last year, Derek Graham had three touchdown receptions. And Lance Kendricks, who was Wisconsin's leading receiver coming into this game, really didn't do anything.
The second good tight end who hasn't really done a lot, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think Kyle Rudolph really did a lot either in the Notre Dame game as well. So, but I think, then again, Chris Semo was really just to pop, you know, bubble screens and pass, like 4 or 5 yard slants to the receivers. But I could be wrong.
I thought it was a very impressive performance. How did you feel about the offense? How do you think that Kirk Cousins looked on Saturday?
You know, for the first half, it was sort of like a repeat of the Notre Dame game. It looked a little discombobulated at times. Just trying to, like, maybe force run two plays. The second half, he looked fantastic.
Yeah, again, like the Notre Dame game, you know, the tail of two halves.
I mean, part of it was just, like, finally receivers, like, just Charlie Gant was, I think, wide open on one play. I think it was something for, like, 8 of 10 scores. That's basically through the Dell, and the first half was just a thing of beauty.
Yeah, that happened right in front of me, and I saw Dell put his foot down, and I mean, that was just perfect pass execution, because that's not an easy throw, and it's not an easy catch, and it was, I mean, how much momentum did that give the team heading into the locker room with a 10-point lead? That was just fantastic. I can't remember feeling that good about a big game at the half as I did on Saturday, so it was a wonderful time at the stadium. So let's talk a little bit about the running game, and I guess by extension, the offensive line. So I think one of the big things about the game on Saturday was the reemergence of Larry Caper, who didn't touch the ball all that much, but man, did he make his touches count. The two big runs and the one enormous catch on the final drive in the fourth quarter, just adding him to Le'Veon Bell and Edwin Baker just gives us an embarrassment of riches in that position, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think that's partly why this week in the depth chart that was just released today, it's now a three-way tie at the OR position, you know, between Bell, the running back position, I mean, between Caper, Bell, and Baker. And, yeah, I mean, I think part of what you said, too, is that Caper had the fresh legs in the third and fourth quarter. He just came on and just made some critical plays. And I think you have to give part of the credit to John Treadwell, too, because a lot of those big runs weren't straight up the line. I think part of them realized that they weren't really going to get that huge push against Wisconsin's defensive line because J.J. Watt was doing some things just getting back there. So he's just, like, for example, the pitch to Bell on fourth and one, I think that's why you saw the play-action passes, like, on the one-yard line. And, yeah, Treadwell just did a great job adjusting to that Wisconsin D.
Yeah, that's a future head coach right there. You know, for better or for worse, I think that somebody's going to hire him at the end of the year and is going to have a very nice coach on their hands. So he's been enormously impressive to me in the past couple of weeks, keeping the team together throughout the turmoil and also with the play calling, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, the one thing that was interesting to me about Caper was that his big plays in the fourth quarter all came on third down. The screen pass that went for 35 yards, there was his rush on third down that went for 11 yards, and then there was the six-yard rush to bring it down to the one-yard line and set up the fourth down touchdown pass to B.J. Cunningham. I wonder if that may be the role for him. I think that he's got the speed and the versatility to be a really nice third down back, and certainly something that any offense can use.
I mean, exactly. I think of the three backs right now, he's the least likely to be the goal line back because Baker's about the same weight and a little shorter, so he's got a lower center of gravity. Bell, 6'2", 6'30". Yeah, still be growing. Like, he could, I mean, 6'2", 6'30", you could probably get to, what, 240, 250 by in a couple of years?
I think so, yeah. You know, you don't want to say the sky's the limit on the guy, but, man, he's got a future ahead of him. But, you know, none of this would happen if it wasn't for vastly improved play by the offensive line, I think. You know, I don't think that we were a particularly good run-blocking team last year, and as far as I'm concerned, it's been almost a 180. I think that pass-blocking might be a little bit worse than last year, but I'll take that trade-off, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it almost reminds me of, like John L.'s first year, D'Antonio's first year, where but the offensive line was just going to be maybe, like, mediocre or just okay, and then just takes, for some reason, takes a step forward. And that just goes to show that I think most of us listening to this podcast, yeah, no clue what we're talking about when it comes to offensive line. And tell me it's one of those right there.
Yeah, I don't. I think unless you've actually played the position, the things that they do are pretty opaque. But, yeah, you can't argue with the results. It's Wisconsin that we were playing against on Saturday. Wisconsin's defensive line always is good. J.J. Watt is obviously a fantastic player, and that's a good defensive line even without O'Brien Schofield, and we still ran for 175 yards against them.
Yeah, and I mean, Bell and Baker, they were getting about almost 5 yards carry. I think it was 4.8 and 4.7 for both of them. So they were both getting a fair amount of yardage on their runs.
Yeah, they're getting Javon Ringer quantity of yards without the Javon Ringer quantity of carry. I think that it's certainly a positive. Personally, I think that in the Notre Dame game and the Wisconsin game, particularly in the second half of those games, you could really see Cousins growing up all the time. I think that he's making better decisions, and quite honestly, I think that going forward, he had those two tough games to start the season where he was struggling to get in sync with the receivers a little bit, but if we can bottle his performance in the second half on Saturday and keep it going forward, I mean, this team can go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, with Cousins' first two games, it's almost as if you could see him thinking on the field, just like making like checkdowns, just sort of like thinking consciously almost. And I think it's sort of becoming unconscious now, where it's just starting to do things. And with that, the reaction time is going to increase. And yeah, the second half of both the Notre Dame and the Wisconsin games were just that's about as good as
it's just locked in.
A couple sacks in Notre Dame.
Yeah, absolutely. And people criticize him for that sack in overtime against Notre Dame. I mean. Yeah, he might have been able to throw the ball away there, but the rush was coming from all three sides, and the worst thing in the world there would have been a turnover. Yeah, it was kind of unfortunate how that happened, but I don't assign a whole lot of blame to him on that play personally.
No, he was just building the drama. He knew exactly where that thing was going to end up.
He was just setting up the play for Little Giants. I mean, if he doesn't take the sack there,
yeah.
I mean.
Right.
You actually let Conroy catch a 35-yard field goal, not so much the 47-yard one, which is a discussion in and of itself. Dan Conroy has been everything we could have hoped for and more so far.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've talked about enough about this game.
Yeah. So as our first guest on the show, we have Brian Cook, the head writer and proprietor of a little-known outpost on the Internet called MGoBlog. Brian is the preeminent Michigan blogger and honestly a big influence on our site as well. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Okay. So this is obviously a very big game for both teams this weekend. And I think one of the interesting things for me looking at this game is that I think that this is the most evenly matched game between these two teams in many, many years. Do you agree with that?
In terms of expectations, I think so. I'm not exactly sure who I think should win. I haven't had that feeling in a long time. Obviously, the last couple of years, I didn't think much of Michigan's chances. I guess maybe last year was Michigan was still in their dewy-eyed and innocent phase in that year. So maybe that one might rank up there, but this is definitely, I can't believe there's a 5-point spread. I thought this would be close to, you know, 2 or 3 because I pick them and then it's at home for Michigan.
Yeah, and they normally say that home is worth about 3 points in the spread, right? So still establishing Michigan as a 2-point favorite, which seems a little bit high to me, but, you know, this is obviously a very strong Michigan team that we're dealing with, particularly on the offensive side of the ball.
Half of it's strong. I don't know about the other half.
Well, I, I guess we should probably start with the offense. And obviously, you can't begin to talk about Michigan this year without talking about Denard Robinson, who has been spectacular for the Wolverines. We've all seen the highlights of his runs. But the thing that was most interesting to me when I was taking a look at Michigan statistics is that he ranks fourth in the country in pass efficiency right now. Can you talk a little bit about how Michigan has thrown the ball this year and in what situations MSU might see Michigan use the passing game on Saturday?
Well, a large part of why he's so high in passer efficiency is how effective play action is when he's down there and how safeties essentially just can't play deep because you have to bring those guys up in the box or Denard's going to run all over you. So against Indiana, they got a 70-yard touchdown on a simple slant that would have gone 10 for 10 yards if there was a safety in the area. But both those guys were blitzing in an attempt to contain Michigan's run game. So he's obviously not the fourth-best passer in the country, but because of his running ability, he gets opportunities that a Chapel or a Cousins doesn't. So Michigan just needs to take advantage of that. And he's been fairly accurate on deep balls. If I think that's going to be a big key in the game, is Michigan is going to get three or four opportunities to hit a deep pass over the top, and can Denard take advantage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, I'm going to ask this question, and I don't mean for it to sound like kind of a mad hater question, but if you were – what weaknesses do you see in Denard Robinson's game? But for instance, if you were Michigan State in this game, how would you try to go about defending him?
I mean, not to sound like a mad homer, but I think the thing about Denard is that it becomes very difficult because he's shown on those play action things where he runs the ISO draw and then pulls up to throw. How do you defend that?
Right.
If you keep the safeties back, then you've got problems on the ground, and if you bring them up, then you know you've got Roy Roundtree running 2-1 and then falling down because that's what he does. So I think it's going to be really tough. I think honestly your best bet is to
I've been thinking this entire week that we might see Greg Jones spying Denard Robinson a whole lot, which would make sense, you know, our best defensive player going basically head-to-head with your best offensive player. Has anybody tried that kind of thing against Michigan?
Not really. I mean, the way Michigan runs its offense makes it pretty difficult because a lot of the runs are just like Denard running the ball and then spying him.
the incredibly surprising quarterback draws.
Right. So he's just running the ball, and if you're just spying the guy running the ball, you're just kind of playing run defense.
Right.
But when you're playing run defense against Denard, the offense has an extra blocker because the quarterback is running the ball. So I don't know necessarily think the spy idea works except on passing downs. And if Michigan's in a lot of passing downs, I think they're going to be in trouble.
Well, I guess the logical question right there is just to go to the running game. You know, a few of the running backs back who have been injured, such as how are they going to factor into Saturday's game, I should say. Like, are we going to see more carries between the running backs and Denard, or is this going to be another one of those games where Denard has to carry it 25 times and just the whole team on its back again?
Part of that will obviously be dependent on what Michigan State does on the read option. Michigan's sort of moving into stuff where they're blocking different guys along the line, so they'll block a linebacker or they'll block a defensive end. And I've been hoping that they would pull out the midline, where the guy that they're optioning off of is a defensive tackle for years, because Oregon does that, and it's incredibly effective for them. So if they're in a situation where surprising Michigan State players are being let free and they aren't reacting well, then you could see Denard carry it a lot. Otherwise, handoffs will happen, and I think handoffs are the way to go if you can make Denard give the ball to Vincent Smith, who's small, a good blocker, a pretty reliable, but not anywhere near the class of Michigan State's running back. So if you can do it, but then a lot of the Michigan's run game is just straight Denard run, so you're only going to be able to limit his carries to a certain extent.
While we're on the subject of Michigan's running backs real quickly, do you have any injury information about Michael Shaw?
He will probably play. They're holding him out of practice, so he's obviously going to be somewhat close to a game-time decision. They said they were optimistic today, so I think he will play. I don't know if he'll be 100%. If he is 100%, he's pretty clearly Michigan's best tailback right now. He's you know, he occasionally takes the wrong cut and he doesn't have great vision, but he does have good speed and he's enough of a blocker that they don't feel like they have to put Smith on there all the time.
So related to the running game, I think, you know, I'm in reading your UFRs this year so far, I think the thing that's been the most surprise for me in terms of Michigan has been how highly you've rated the offensive line play for the Wolverines so far this year. Can you tell me how you think that's come together and, you know, what you've seen out of them so far this year?
Well, they've got three guys who were not playing at all last year who were playing at a very high level. Of course, David Moak, who started from a redshirt freshman under Rodriguez, was out with an injury for most of the year. And then Patrick Omama was a redshirt freshman last year, started the last three games. And Taylor Lewin came on and beat out a redshirt junior who'd been playing pretty decently at tackle. And all those three guys are agile. They're very strong, and they're capable of getting second-level blocks. And that's, I think, the biggest difference this year from the last couple of years, where the last couple of years Michigan would get a good block on a defensive tackle, and they would get a gap, and then the running back would hit that gap, and then a linebacker would destroy the tailback because the guys who had been moving downfield just aren't agile enough to block those guys. Now with those three guys and Steve Schilling, who's always been pretty mobile and is now getting his strength up to where you would expect it to be, you've got four of the five guys on the line who can legitimately block a linebacker, and that turns a five-yard run into an 80-yard.
Right.
The pass protection has also been better than expected. A lot of that is just people are afraid to rush Jannard because you get on your lane, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Michigan State's, I think, our biggest deficiency on defense this season has been lack of a pass rush from the front four. And between Denard Robinson's running and the kind of pass and plays that Michigan, I think, tries to run, that seems like less of an issue because we're not going to see many traditional drop-back looks from Michigan on Saturday, are we?
No, you're not. I mean, Michigan runs the occasional drop-back look. They'll do it on long yardage. Occasionally they'll do it on first down, but I don't think they did it more than a few times against Indiana. So you are right that a lack of a pass rush from the front four is going to be less of an issue this because Michigan will roll the pocket, they'll run play action. They're not going to just sit back and try to pick you apart like John Navarre's back there. So
we're going to have to go away. We've been asking questions about each unit of the offense, but I'm just going to divert for a little bit, ask you a question. It's going to go like this. Michigan should always go for it on fourth and blank. And I want you to give me, let's say they're on the 30, the opponent's 30. Fourth and
they're on the,
what is, turn to
they're on the, they're not going to make a 50-yard field goal. So basically anything short of fourth and goal, I would probably go for it.
Well, I actually think that this is something that I was planning on asking later in the call, but this is I guess a good time to talk about it. If Michigan needs a field goal to win this game, is there any possibility of getting it?
There's always a possibility. Everybody was very concerned about the kicking game going into the season, and then in the spring game, they came out and they hit every single one of them under, you know, basically rush. They were basically getting rushed like they would in a real game, and I don't know what happened. Maybe they just got fluky or lucky, but I think if it's a extra point style field goal, they'll make it. They're very practiced at doing extra points this year, and to 35, 40 yards, 45 yards, I think Michigan should be planning its offense around the idea that they're not going to kick a field goal of more than 35 yards.
Okay, moving back to the offense, so we talked about pass efficiency earlier, and obviously there are receivers on the other end of those passes that have been caught. How have Michigan's receivers been this year? Is there anyone in particular that you think can do a whole lot of damage against Michigan State on Saturday?
I love them as a group. I think there's only been a couple of drop balls all year, but there's not one guy who's like a Braylon. There are four guys who are all, I would say, above average Big Ten receivers, but there's not one incredible star. Stoneman and Hemingway are kind of traditional outside receiver types. They're big. Stoneman's faster. Hemingway's a better leaper. He's also 230 pounds. He's really big. And then Odoms and Roundtree our slot types, although Odom's playing outside, they're good blockers. They have great hands. They're not gonna pluck it out of the air for two defensive backs, but if they get open, and they do get open, and the ball is to them, they'll catch it. So I think it's a surprise. It's been one of the better, beyond Denard, I think it's been the most positive surprise of the season, how good the receivers are at catching and blocking.
Let's move and talk about the Michigan defense a little bit. I know that this may not be the most pleasant subject for you. So the pass defense, 120th out of 120 in yards given up. Is there any hope for them on Saturday? I know that you had a post about this yesterday. What do you think Michigan can do to stop the bleeding a little bit?
I do think that's a little bit grim because three of the five teams they've played so far are heavy passing spreads. Notre Dame, Indiana, and Bowling Green all hardly ran the ball.
Sure.
So they're something like 79th in efficiency, and I think that's a fair estimate where they're obviously bad, but they're not like bottom of the MAC level bad.
Well, I know that they made a couple of big plays against Notre Dame, came up with some interceptions.
Yeah, they intercepted Notre Dame three times, and those are all earned interceptions. They're obviously not very good. Their biggest problem is that they are pretty much forced to play zone because they don't have the requisite athleticism at cornerback, and they don't have very much experience at safety. So they play a ton of 3-deep zone, and they play that 3-deep zone usually with 8 guys in the coverage. But people keep sucking out of position, whether it's Craig Rowe or some of the freshman cornerbacks or Obi Ezra. Their drops aren't very good. They just don't end up in the right place, and they open up a lot of opportunities for others to exploit. And Chapel was all over that. And, I can see Cousins doing the same thing. I have a lot of respect for Cousins. He's a smart, heady quarterback. He's probably, not NFL material, but can he torch Michigan secondary? Yes, he can. So I'll be happy if they can get some pressure on him and get him on the ground as they sort of bleed down the field. And I think that's how Michigan stops Michigan State, is by getting negative plays and then just being able to stay in their zones on the third and medium that result.
And kind of along those lines, so the problem with the Michigan pass coverage this year has been the secondary and the linebackers, not a lack of pass rush?
Well, it's hard to tell because they're rushing three so much of the time that, it's hard for a three-man rush to get to the quarterback, and they seem to be doing pretty all right given the fact that it's a three-man rush so much of the time. They picked up 3 sacks against Indiana. Mike Martin does get to the quarterback with some regularity, even though he's getting double or triple teamed. I would very much prefer it if they put Craig Rowe's hand down and they just had him rush the quarterback all the time, because he's not that effective in space, but he does seem to be a good pass rusher. But they're just playing it so conservatively that he's dropping into coverage most of the time, and he's vulnerable against misdirection and screens, and you can tell that he's not really a linebacker. He's a defensive end who's out of...
On the Michigan running game, the statistics are better, although it seems that... Well, let me ask you. Do you think that Michigan's relatively good rushing defense has been more a product of teams focusing on passing the ball, or do you think that this is a good rush defense that Michigan has this season?
It's really tough to tell, because one of the big problems with Michigan's run defense was that game against UMass. In that game against UMass, the linebackers were terrible and the run support from the cornerbacks was terrible. And they were better before that, and they've been better after it. So if that's just an outlier that they were flat for that UMass game, then I think it is kind of an average-ish run defense. And it's obviously not good, and there's still a lot of problems with the linebackers being in the right place at the right time. But the defensive line is pretty decent, especially against the run. Martin's very good, and Van Bergen and Banks are explosive pass rushers, but they're pretty decent against the run. And then the linebacking core, when it shows up in the right place, does tackle. So, I'll be very interested to see what happens at Michigan State, because Michigan has not really played an offense that runs the way Michigan State does, except maybe UMass. And as I said, the problems against UMass were not really of physical inability to cope with them. It was just they made a lot of mental mistakes that they seem to have repaired. So I think you're going to see Michigan State average somewhere between 4 and 5 yards a carry. I'm hoping for the latter end, but I wouldn't be surprised by the high end.
Real quickly before we kind of wrap things up here, we already talked about Michigan's issues at kicker. How have the rest of the special teams look? MSU obviously got a huge punt return, a game-changing punt return from Tishon Martin last week. The return game for MSU has been pretty good. How has Michigan's coverage been, and does Michigan have anybody who's a threat to break any big returns?
For Michigan's return game, Stoneham has not broken anything long after having a very good year last year, and I don't know if that's on Stoneham or if it's on the kick team. They've had a lot of practice, they've had a lot of opportunities, and they haven't really gotten anything past the 30, so that's been a disappointment after a very good last year. Punt return, haven't had a lot of it. When we did have a lot of it against Notre Dame, Ben Turk put them all up right in the air, and he had Gallon to fair catch all of them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that guy's impossible to return against.
Yeah, so he, you know, Gallon's made 4 or 5 errors, and I he's not very reliable. I'm not expecting a whole lot out of the punt return game. As far as coverage, Michigan hasn't covered a lot of punts either, but the problem there has been that the freshman kicker, the punter, was the number one punter in the country, but has had a pretty bad case of freshman jitters. He dropped a punt, got a block against UMass. He shanked a bunch of punts against Notre Dame. He did pretty well on a few punts against Indiana and Bowling Green. So, actually, wait, he didn't punt against Bowling Green. But he did a little bit better against Indiana, and hopefully that won't be a problem for Michigan against State. That's about it.
How do you feel about this game on Saturday? Do you anticipate a really close shootout like everybody else does, or do you think we might see something different?
You know, I don't know. Because Michigan's defense was so vulnerable to what Chapel was able to do. I don't know if Michigan State will be able to do the same thing, not because of Cousins, but just because of the coaching philosophy. So I think they might have more of an erratic time on the ground, and Michigan State's defense probably is at least equivalent to Notre Dame, and Michigan only put up 28 on Notre Dame. So this could be a little bit lower scoring than people expect. I don't know if it will be a full-fledged shootout. I mean, you know, I went into this game this season not having any idea what to expect against UConn, and then I didn't have any idea what to expect against Notre Dame. Now, a lot of stuff could happen against the Michigan State game, and I wouldn't be surprised. So I'd be surprised if it was 13-10, I guess.
Real quickly, what do you think is the biggest key for Michigan to have success on Saturday, either offense or defense?
I think they have to get State's defensive line blocked and not let them do what they did last year, which was time the snap so exquisitely that they were offside 4 or 5 times and didn't get called for it. And I think that for the first 2 years of Rich Rodriguez's career, it's been clear that D'Antonio has put way more time into preparing for Michigan than Rodriguez has for Michigan State. And they've had all kinds of coaching advantages. I think Michigan's been badly outcoached the first couple of years, and I want to see Michigan repair the obvious problems and then maybe respond in kind.
And this is maybe not totally relevant to Michigan State, but I saw Greg Dooley put an interesting post up on M. Victor's late this afternoon where he said that this game, this year, for the first time in a long time, this game means more to Michigan than Michigan State, just because he kind of sees this as a watershed game for Rich Rodriguez's career at U of M. Do you see it the same way?
I think it's a very important game, but you know, if they lose to Michigan State and they go out and they beat Iowa next week, I don't think a lot of people are going to be calling for his head. So I think it'll feel like it. I think if Michigan loses to Michigan State, it's going to feel like last year all over again, especially if they can't run the ball, especially now they're past Indiana, now they're in the meat of the Big Ten schedule, and it's just the same thing over again. I think until they beat one of these three teams coming up, Penn State is the other one, that Michigan fans are just going to be on pins and needles about not only this year but the future of the program. So I think it feels like it right now. But you know, if he comes back and he beats somebody else in the Big Ten against 8-4, they'll be fine.
Okay, I think that'll do it. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Brian. We really appreciate your insight into the game on Saturday, and I hope your team fails miserably.
I hope. No, I'm not going to say that.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thanks a bunch
for having me on, guys.
Our second and last guest of the podcast is going to be Mason Brew Dave from the excellent Michigan website, masonbrew.com. How are you doing tonight, Dave?
Doing well, guys. What's happening? Are you getting excited for the game yet?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, I know. The whole concept of sleep has kind of evaporated over the last few days, trying to figure out a way that we're going to be able to actually stop somebody. So, you know, little thing.
Well, that's the way that we like to start this conversation, talking about Michigan's failings.
Well, I guess you caught me in a generous mood tonight, then, guys.
So I guess my first question is going to be pretty basic. So if you could sum up your emotions for this game in one word, what would it be?
Nervous. I really can't say anything else. I mean, the game is so so up in the air, I think, for both sides. I mean, it's all offense for Michigan. It's, you know, is MSU going to be able to stop Denard Robinson? Is Michigan going to be able to stop anything? You know, I mean, there's really no other way to describe it other than just being nervous, because there's, you know, for both teams, there's a lot on the line. I mean, it's 6-0 for you guys going down to Evanston. It's 6-0 for us welcoming Iowa. So, you know, there's a big difference between being bowl eligible and not being bowl eligible, as you guys well know, and as we have found out over the last 2 years.
I mean, yeah, I got to echo your feelings, too, that I am just nervous. It seems like I've lived, like, 6 days already in three just waiting for this game to come up, and time's not just moving any faster right now.
I'll third that sentiment. It's going to be it's been nerve-wracking all week, but I'm sure that that Saturday is going to be worth it.
Anyway, next question is, a few days ago you posted on Mason Brew an article about how Michigan should switch to a 4-2-5 defensive lineman instead of their current one. Do you just want to, like, take a couple minutes and sort of, like, give a brief recap of your reasoning behind it?
Well, you know, it's just a simple thing. I mean, I think everyone who's followed Michigan football knows that linebacker is not exactly our position of strength right now. And the whole concept is basically to, A, minimize the role of the linebacker, which I know sounds insane, but when it's not your strongest point, you try to figure out ways to get around something. But the rationale is, look, we got four decent down linemen. I think Greg Banks and Mike Martin at the tackle, you know, tackle and defensive tackle position would be a fairly good middle of the line. Craig Rowe and Ryan Van Bergen as, you know, defensive ends rather than as hybrid kind of DT or linebackers would be a lot better than what we're doing right now with them. So I'd like to be able to get a four-man rush to get a little bit of pressure on Cousins and at least try and take some of the impetus off of our linebackers to try and stop every running play, or our safety to stop every running play, and try and get a little cohesiveness and push up front, which is something Michigan's sorely been lacking. I mean, we've got a couple sacks here and there, but I think those sacks are a little bit misleading in terms of how much pressure we've actually got. And I think Indiana threw the ball 64 times and we got two sacks. No explain.
So your entire post from a couple days ago about your proposed defensive realignment, which is a fantastic post, by the way, and I would recommend any of our listeners go and take a look at it at Mason Brew. It's all kind of, it was spurred on by what you obviously perceive to be very poor linebacker play for Michigan. Can you explain briefly what the problem has been, and do you think that there's any kind of resolution or improvement that can be made going forward?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where you hate to single out individual players because, you know, I mean, that's not really the purpose of being a fan. What I will say instead is that we have two senior linebackers who have played the positions for the last 3 years, and one of them is showing a great deal of improvement, which is Jonas Mouton, or Jonas Mouton, whatever the hell he's calling himself today. He's been phenomenal this year. He's leading the conference in tackles. He's got two interceptions already on the year. He's making great strides under Greg Robinson. Greg Robinson did the exact same thing with, you know, all world missed tackle leader Stevie Brown and turned him into a seventh-round draft. No one understands how the hell that happened. But unfortunately, we haven't seen similar improvement out of Obi Eze, who is our senior middle linebacker who's been doing this for 3 years. And unfortunately, I think, you know, he's kind of reached the ceiling. He was recruited as a fullback. If I recall correctly, he never played linebacker before he got to college. And you know, they're just mistakes at this point he's been making for so long that you just don't think that they're going to get any better. So my thought in talking about the 4-2-5, which is really just another adaptation of the three of the stack that we're running, we're just dropping, you know, you're dropping your spur hybrid, which is, you know, the spur between your safety and linebacker, down to more of a linebacker position, and you're moving your depth backer, which is our defensive end slash linebacker, into just basically a straight defensive end position. So you have the flexibility with the fifth member of the secondary, going to more of a linebacking position, and then have that Craig Rowe type player go up to the line and be able to get some pressure, because he's much better as a defensive end, somebody who's going after the quarterback and dropping back into coverage. I mean, if I see Craig Rowe in coverage against you guys, I'm going to be very, very worried, because he's just simply not good at it yet, and OBDZ just isn't good at it.
We're going to play a little game now. I want you to give the number of yards the number is going to have to get, either passing or rushing. He can do 400 yards rushing or 1 yard passing, or 400 yards passing, 1 yard rushing. Sort of mix it up a little bit. You know, Michigan State, kind of something different. But either combined rushing and passing yards, I want you to get the amount of yards it's going to take for him to beat Michigan State on Saturday.
Gee, hell if I know. I mean, let's go with 482 total. And, you know, split that up with more passing yards. Let's say 270-something for passing, and the rest are rushing. I mean, the one thing I think that's going to happen in this game is, at least what I've seen out of Michigan State, is that the linebackers throw the ball very, very effectively. And you guys were I think, designed to beat a team like Wisconsin, a team that runs a very similar pro-style offense. You know, it's, you know, a backhead of the offense with, you know, a competent pass. You guys just had the good fortune of having a much better quarterback than Wisconsin. But it's really going to depend not just on Greg Jones, who I think is going to, you know, he'll be his normal outstanding self, and, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be able to pursue. But, I mean, don't think for a second that Michigan hasn't recognized that and is going to send either Patrick Omame, who is our outstanding pulling guard, or one and or both the H-back tight ends, Kevin Coker and Martell Webb, who will have a specific assignment of finding him and at least, you know, slowing him down a tad bit. So it's really going to depend, I don't think, as much on Greg Jones, but it's going to depend on your other linebackers and your safeties to make that read and be able to get to trip Denard up in space. So if you're looking for numbers, I don't think Denard is going to have as big a running game against you guys, simply because you're more athletic than Indiana's defense was. And I think it'll be similar to what Notre Dame was able to do. Outstanding middle linebacker, Manti Te'o, but, you know, some questions on the side, even though you guys are an excellent linebacking core overall. So you're going to see a little lower number of rushing yards, but it also means you're going to have a safety and all three linebackers in the line of scrimmage, and that's going to help out Denard's passing lane. So that's why you're going to have a little bit more in the passing lane.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a good answer, because when Eric Gordon went out in the Notre Dame game, I think that had a big effect on Michigan State's defense. He just saw, not that they would have done it, not that in any way, but Notre Dame just started having those 5-yard slants, bubble screens. And Eric Gordon, I know on our side, is definitely a player who can just has the speed to really cover those wide receivers and, like, those 5 to 10 yards and outs and bubble screens. It can really make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. The bubble screen is obviously a staple of our offensive diet right now. So if you have anybody that can disrupt that, then you're in good shape. The one thing I will say, though, is that, and I think this is overlooked a lot, I've been harping on it on Mason Brew over the last few weeks, is that the wide receivers and tight ends for Michigan, I have never seen a position group block as well as they do. And I've never seen a group like this. And you're talking about some incredible receivers at Michigan, great receivers at Michigan State that I've seen over the years. I mean, you go to the Buckeyes, nobody blocks like this group of receivers. And that's really what's opened up a lot of that second and third level stuff for Michigan, because, you know, you're not usually going to see, you know, 180-pound, you know, wide receiver come over and crack a linebacker who's, you know, looking to make an easy tackle. And you've seen that out of Michigan this year. These guys are tough, and they know their assignments, and they performed incredibly, incredibly well. So you're right. Those bubble screens are going to be a huge thing for Michigan State to break up, but I also don't think that it's going to be as easy, per se, as it would have been against Notre Dame, because those wide receivers can't block to save their lives. They're awful. They're great. They're great downfield, but if you ask them to do anything else besides dance and run, you're pretty much screwed.
I think that's really a really good point about Michigan's downfield blocking. And, you know, our cornerbacks and safeties certainly have been willing to play physical football. You know, we've seen that throughout this year. We saw that a lot last week against Wisconsin. But that's going to be a big test for them in, you know, how trying not to be sealed off by those wide receivers to prevent Denard Robinson from racking up the massive running plays that we've seen throughout this season for him. Let me ask you real quickly about the big picture, Dave. What do you think that this game means in a bigger sense of the program? I mean, I read something today where this game, for the first time in a long time, might mean more to Michigan than to Michigan State. Do you agree with that? Do you agree that this is an exceptionally big game for Michigan? And do you think that the coaching staff is putting a priority on this one?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, the one thing that I've gotten out of Rodriguez over the last, you know, I guess it's 3 years now, is that, you know, I think he understands the importance of these rivalry games and what they mean in this conference. I mean, coming from the Big East, you know, your rivalry, I mean, what's the big rivalry? You got Pitt, is West Virginia, and maybe Maryland. I mean, the level of Viratol just doesn't even come close to, you know, the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry when it comes down to this. But that being said, I don't think that the coaches prepare these kids any different. I think they're just different incentives that they get these kids going for. I mean, it is a rivalry game. It is a big game. A lot of these guys went to high school together. They played against each other, you know, and, you know, Pop Warner ball. So I think you're going to see both teams come out fired up. And LVS and I talked about this on the Maze Pants podcast last night, is that as a result, you're going to see some really great defense early on, which is going to shock the hell out of everybody. But I think you're probably going to see a low-scoring affair through the first two quarters. But big picture-wise, how this is going to affect the program, I think you're right. I mean, this game this year does mean more to Michigan than it does to Michigan State, because Michigan State is much more of a proven commodity right now. You got, I wrote this earlier today, is that I think Michigan State is the most balanced team in the Big Ten. I mean, you look at the running numbers, the rushing numbers, the passing yards, the rushing yards, you look at the quality of the defense, you look at the quality of the offense, which honestly I didn't think was going to be as good as it was this year. And it is the most balanced team. Is it the most athletic team? No. Is it the most talented team? No. But they play well, and I think that's kind of been a hallmark of D'Antonio's tenure at Michigan State. The other thing that I think, you know, this means for Michigan is, you know, can you get past a big team on only offense? Because that seems to be, you know, where we're heading right now. Is that, can you beat a team like Michigan State, who is fairly balanced and does actually have a clue what they're doing? And that's one of those things that we have yet to see out of a Rodriguez team. That's one of those things that is a big question mark. So I don't think this is a make-or-break game for the season, because Penn State is very much down this year. Iowa cannot defend a spread quarterback to save their life. Illinois, as much as they are improved on defense, is still Illinois. Purdue is completely crippled right now. So it's not a make-or-break game for Michigan in terms of the season, but in terms of maybe a perception that Michigan State has surpassed or has equaled Michigan in terms of their ability to recruit and perform on the field. Yeah, I mean, but that's going to be the case until Michigan wins again, and that's always the case. I mean, if you're beating your rival and, you know, you're going to bowl games while the other one isn't, then you're ahead of them. And would it be sweet to win next year for the program? I think it would be a huge boost for Rodriguez. Is it something that's going to get him canned? No.
If we can just wrap up real quickly, you can give us a score prediction if you'd like or not, but what do you see happening on Saturday?
Well, actually, I don't know if anyone saw this. You know, Phil Steele had his predictions out for the top 25, and I think he said it was like 31-37 Michigan on this one. And this is just – he basically bases this on what the stats look like and, you know, all the SAGRAN ratings and all that crap. You know, there's a part of me – I think that – prediction's probably fairly dead on. I would probably say, you know, LVS, I think you said 38-35 last night. I'd probably go, 35-31 Michigan. I think this is going to be one of those games that's decided by, you know, is decided to an extent by more than 3 points, just because Michigan's not going to kick field goals. They're just not. We don't have a proven field goal kicker. The kid that we recruited to be a field goal kicker has kind of got the yips right now. I'd probably say it's going to be one of those games. And, you know, obviously I'm going to take the homer pick and say Michigan pulls this one out. But, you know, it is at home. This is the first time the Spartans have played at the new stadium, which I think is a, you know, you'll be surprised. For any of you that are going to the game, it's a much different environment now than it has been in the past. It's no longer the mild house. I mean, it is truly, truly loud. And it's really a lot of fun to go there as a Michigan fan after a couple of years of just kind of being, you know, very, very quiet, very, very staid. So I give, you know, the home team the 4-point edge. I think that's the spread. Is that the spread right now? What's the over on this game?
200, 300? Actually, it's I think it's around 64.
Okay, so it's infinity. All right. I think this is just going to be one of those games where, you know, you're going to see a lot of points scored. If the over is under 60, just take it.
Take the over. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, take the over on that one. But it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to get there for it. You know, and I think one of the nice things about the rivalry coming the way that it has recently is that, to an extent, I think there's a healthy respect again, which is kind of nice. It's not the, you know, the standard, you know, people screaming nasty things. I think there's, you know, there's a recognition, at least on behalf of most of the Michigan fans, that, you know, that Michigan State is a viable program again. I mean, it's no longer being run by Tweedledee and Tweedledee dumbass. I mean, as much fun as it was to watch John L. Smith smack himself, it didn't do the conference any favors, and it certainly didn't do the rivalry any favors. And, you know, I mean, the only thing that you have to be wary of is that, you know, you do have a descendant of, you know, of the satanic coaching tree and, the Trussellian coaching tree running your program, which means eventually, you know, you'll be dragged back down into hell from whence he came. But, you know, the rivalry is changing for the better, I think, because Michigan State's program has changed for the better, at least on the field. You know, I mean, you're definitely seeing better things on the field, a more coherent pass attack, more coherent running attack, and coaches that don't spend their day sticking.
Okay, and with that, I think we can wrap it up. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Dave. We appreciate you taking the time.
No problem, guys. I hope your entire team gets the flu before the game. You know, obviously just a short-term illness, but anything that causes massive dehydration and diarrhea, I hope that happens. But and I hope it clears up on Sunday.
The flu isn't going to be the biggest problem when your entire team can track the plate.
So. It's a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing you guys on Saturday, all right?
This has been the Only Colors podcast number 1. We'd like to thank our guests again, Brian Cook from MGL Blog and Dave from Mason Brew. We hope you enjoyed listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Go Green, beat Michigan.